Live and in color from the NBC News radio broadcasting studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf Sup radio studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone show this evening.
All right, and a pleasant afternoon or good evening to everybody online. And this is Rob Starr along with Mr. Chris Davies, and we are the Water Zone. And it's great to be here from everybody. How's everybody doing? Chris?
Doing terrific, Rob. Thanks for asking. Appreciate it, as always.
How's the wonderful weather in California?
So being here on the left coast, an appropriate moniker, by the way, the weather is very pleasant and a good, nice week coming up, too. Not too hot, not cold at all, so kind of like pre-summer.
Well, it's summer here. It's about 101 degrees today. Beautiful sunny skies, and the weather's supposed to continue through next week, so I'm very excited about that. And also speaking about being excited, just to remind our audience, we have a new segment that will be coming up along with Ms. Chris Austin from Maven's Notebook. But every 2 weeks, we're going to have the chairwoman of Kellogg's Garden Products, and she's going to be coming in and doing a segment called So What's Up? What's the Scoop About Soil? And she'll take questions. And people have been calling in, and we've been getting the questions all mounted up and ready to go, and she's going to start addressing them. So anybody has those things, please give us a call, and we'll get those things recorded for that. But we got two great guests today, and I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Chris Davey to introduce our first wonderful guest. So, Chris, why don't you take a stab at it?
All right, Rob, thanks. Appreciate it, man. First of all, Miss Chris Austin from Maven's Notebook this week, a regular on the show, but she had other more important things to do this week. So, Chris, if you happen to hear this on a podcast later, we miss you. Can't wait till you come back. Nonetheless, tonight we have a very special guest to take over the first segment of the show. We have a gentleman by the name of Robert Hunter. Robert Hunter is the general manager of the Municipal Water District of Orange County, a.k.a. MODOC, as we know it here in Southern California. MODOC is a regional wholesaler of water, about 28 member agencies under them, serving about 3.2 million people. And Rob has been general manager, GM, there since 2013, but prior to joining MODOC, Rob was with a company called MWH Americas, Inc. That's a global firm that specializes in pretty much all aspects of what he calls wet infrastructure. He was vice president in the utility management consulting practice and worked nationally with utilities to improve performance planning and productivity. It gave him a broad background on environmental, regulatory, and operational issues, which he's brought forward in his career. One more last quick thing. Rob has also served as general manager, commissioner, if you will, of the Regional Water Utility of the City of Atlanta. A great job back there. So, Rob, welcome to the Water Zone. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Rob.
Well, you're welcome.
I'm here, and I'm honored to fill in for Chris.
Yeah, awesome. Chris Austin is a regular guest of ours, and it's big shoes to fill. But, Rob, I've got all the confidence in the world that we'll do just great. And your colleague, Tiffany Baca, also from MODOC, been on our show before, a friend of the Water Zone for sure. We did Extreme Water Makeover with her, and we know you guys at MODOC and her also support the Wyland Foundation, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great program.
Real question before I let Chris continue. So when you lived in Atlanta, did you get confused with all the streets named Peachtree?
If you live there long enough, it becomes second nature, and you start thinking about naming your dog and your children Peachtree.
And then you have to take them to the varsity to get great hot dogs. But anyway, I'll let Chris go continue this. Go ahead, Chris.
Great. It's a good segue, Rob, because I was going to ask, back in those days in Atlanta and even before that, Rob, there's usually a story of what brings people into this industry. So I'm hoping that there is one for you, Rob. So what is it? What got you into this business in the first place?
Well, I've always worked on the environmental side from coming out of college. But what is really appealing about water in the water industry is that it is really meaningful work. in a city, there are really only four services that the public demand: police, fire, wastewater, and drinking water. And if the drinking water isn't working, the amount of work the fire department does is pretty limited. So it's an essential service. I had a great opportunity in Atlanta, and it is inspirational work. No matter what goes on, you love it every day.
That's a great background story here. So, you know, we're gonna ask you a few questions for our listeners, because the subject pretty much is drought, you know, and what's going on with that. And everybody in Southern California is aware if you watch the news. So I guess let me facet the first question this way. The first thing they say is that admitting to the fact that we have a drought is half the battle, right? But if you live in California, I think most Californians already know that we pretty much live in a perpetual drought here. And we've been in a drought for many years. Would you agree with that?
I agree. This is really a matter of balance. We've heard the media throw around mega drought. Well, in the literature, mega drought is 100 or a few hundred years of drought. But it's virtually impossible we're in a mega drought. But the typical pattern in Southern California is 7 years. And in 7 years, we have 4 years of what we'd call drought. We have 2 years that are about average rainfall. And then we have one wet year. And that's the typical pattern. I saw an editorial recently saying that we're not in a drought. This is what we need to adjust to. This is normal. Now, we've had two very dry years, and not only in Southern California, but in Northern California and throughout the Colorado River Basin. And about half the water in Southern California comes from Northern California or the Colorado River. So it's unusual that we've had two very dry years over that entire area. But it's not exceptionally unusual. It's not out of the ordinary. But we do need to adjust to it and plan on it.
Right. When we in Southern California here, when we hear the news reports, right, it's all, you know, dire and grim and all that stuff, really. So, Rob, maybe you can say how much reality is there, really, to the news reports that we're hearing and seeing these days?
Well, they're careful. They're providing facts, but the implications of the facts are perhaps emphasized a little differently than you might do if you were trying to give a full accounting. For water planning, for water surface, it's a long-term planning effort. Right now in Southern California, the major water utility, the water importer, is the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. And over the past two or three decades, we've invested billions of dollars in projects and storage, and we currently have a record amount of water in storage. So yes, we're going to go through a couple years that are very dry and drought, and we'll use that storage. Now, the balance part of this is we still need to be careful about that storage. We need to look at conservation. We need to have a proper ethic about it. And we need to keep investing in our infrastructure. But it's planning so that you stay ahead of the game, and very careful scrutiny on what your supplies are and what the demand is for those supplies.
All right. I guess, you know, the perplexing thing for me, Rob, is some of the questions that come in from our listeners, right, especially when they know what the subject for the show is going to be, is a timing issue, right? And we hear so much on the news, we read in the newspaper, you know, whatever we wherever we get our information online, that a drought is coming, right? It's like, you know, it's like the old Paul Revere thing, you know, the British are coming kind of thing. The drought is coming. So, you know, is it a timing thing? Like, I don't know, what's the right question here? When will the drought hit, maybe? Is that a fair question?
Well, the reality is there is always a drought coming. We live in a semi-arid area. So we've had two very dry years that can be defined as a drought. Below average precipitation. We're prepared for that. So, yes, there is a drought, but it is the normal pattern of behavior. Now, we may be entering into a period, a longer-term period of less precipitation, but there is no one who can actually predict what's coming up. We do have a meaningful change in that in California, we have relied, and in other parts of the western United States, we rely on snowpack in the mountains. And that snow doesn't melt through midsummer, and that provides a continuous supply of water as it melts. What we are seeing with climate change is we're getting more rain than snow in the winter, so the snow doesn't build up. And, for example, this year, that snow has melted very early. That's a storage and distribution problem that we need to address, because it does look like we may get the same amount of precipitation going into the future as we have in the past. It may be in a different form, but rather than snow, it may be rain. And we have to invest in the systems to store that rain.
So essentially then with climate change, we're kind of seeing the snow level go up a little bit higher, right, during the winter season. And that means that the precipitation that is coming in, whether you can quote unquote call it normal, year after year, is just coming in a different form, right? It needs to be stored earlier from precipitation rather than held in the frozen state as snow. Is that kind of what you were saying?
Yes, and let me interpret part of that for the people in Florida, having lived in Georgia a long time. When we say the snow higher up, it's up in mountains, and that is not a native concept of Florida, of mountains. So. Less snow, higher elevation, less water throughout the summer.
A reference to altitude versus latitude.
Yes.
I get it. Robbie, are you there, buddy? You want to chime in with a question?
Yeah, I would. So let's make believe for today that I'm the governor of California, and I make you the czar of water. What do you think is the top three issues that California has, whether it's the drought, whether it's storage, whether it's broken infrastructure? What would be the three top things that you think need to be addressed immediately in the state?
Well, Rob, I'm sure you would agree with me that the first thing he should do is whatever Rob says.
Brilliant.
Oh, I'll back you.
you know, we have a number of comprehensive programs in California. We also have some very difficult, extensive permitting processes. A key area of the state is what we refer to as the Bay Delta, which is in Northern California. It's the interior bay east of San Francisco, going into the Central Valley, and that area covers about a third of the state. It is the central water supply for the majority of the state. And we have been working for decades in trying to work a balance of the environment, agriculture, and urban use of water. And we kind of get up to the edge of a solution, and then there's a new governor, and we back off and change that. We have to come to a solution of that problem. And everyone is going to be unhappy, kind of the definition of a good solution, I guess. But if, for example, if you're concerned about endangered species up in the Bay Delta, those species will be extinct at the rate we're going before we solve this problem. If you're concerned about water for agriculture, and agriculture, you know, provides some incredible number of the vegetables in, from California to the rest of the United States. If you're concerned about agriculture, then we need to come to a solution because we are depleting all of our groundwater. If your concern is urban supplies and the export water from the Delta to Southern California, we need to come to a solution that works for everyone. And it is politically unpopular because everyone is going to give something up. But we need to make those investments and we need to make the hard decisions. So I would address those three different components in the Bay Delta. We have an issue in California, as we do nationally, of the affordability of water, as we have to spend more money on treating water and producing water and transporting water. Those rates keep going up. And the reality is we have an unequal income distribution, and there are communities who cannot afford water or cannot afford to invest in the infrastructure to keep their water clean. And we need to solve that problem. There is no reason in the United States why people should have contaminated water for drinking water supply. Those would be the major issues that I'd focus on.
Well, I definitely will back you 2,000,000% because that's my, Chris will tell you that's my speech all the time, that how can anybody live in America and drink dirty water and contaminated water? And I don't understand why the, not you guys, but the EPAs and things should have came in a long time ago and start looking at this thing and put things together. I know there's been meetings and even through your organization's seminars that you had, talking about, you know, who's going to pay for the water. Should the bigger agencies take over the little mom and pop ones, the private ones? And it's not, you're right, it's not a simple solution, and not everybody's going to be happy with it. But the problem I see as a as an outsider, as a citizen, I see everybody arguing with each other, but I don't see them coming together and saying, you know what, we can't have everything we want, but to fix it, we need to give away a little bit of something so we can all be happy. But I don't see that happening. I don't. Even like when Governor Brown was in charge and he said, okay, everybody has to cut back 25%. And water agencies like Riverside or Western or even you had storage of water, more than enough. And you guys did a great job. I have to say all the water agencies in the United States have done a great job in educating the public about water use efficiency and how to conserve and things like that, and through the schools and all of that. And it's been great. But after that, it's the politicians that don't seem to get that. It's either their way or no way. And it's always, let's have another meeting. And nothing, you know, they say they get things understood together, but they never resolve the problem. And you're right, it can't keep going on like this forever and ever. They got to talk about it. And you know, you mentioned agriculture, not only the food, but look at the jobs that will go away if that happens. And look at people that have water rights from 100 something years ago that can't get the water they're supposed to get. Nobody wants to give in. So, like I said, I back you 1,000,000% on the top three things that you said. That needs to happen.
And you know, part of that agricultural issue is equity. We're all eating the food that comes from there. It's not really equitable if we say, oh, well, that fertilizer that contaminated your groundwater, that's your issue. You guys need to clean that up when we've gotten the benefit. And there are lots of problems to be overcome to solve the issue. You know, you got state constitution problems, you have legal problems, all kinds of issues, but we need to emphasize how we're going to solve it as opposed to the obstacles to getting there.
Absolutely.
I agree, Rob. The top three, the excellent summary of the top three there. And I agree with Rob and you too, Rob, that it's a complex issue, right? As illustrated every week with Maven's notebook when she comes on. It's a lot of stuff to talk about. So I just want to go back to the drought just a little bit and say, if we do see another couple of years or 2 to 3 years here of this dry weather and less than normal precipitation, right? Or do you see us getting back to the sort of restrictions and things that we were doing back in, 2015, 2016, during the last drought, Rob? Do you see us kind of going back that direction?
Well, a number of things have changed since then. At that point, the governor jumped in and mandatory restrictions on everybody, whether you had a problem or not. So there were some utilities who had invested millions and millions of dollars in supplies who were perfectly fine, who had to cut their water use, even though that water wasn't going to go anywhere else. They couldn't use it. So it was a very blunt instrument that changed during that drought, and what ended up was a requirement for all water utilities to do a 5-year stress test, which was really analyzing in 5 years of low water supply, are you prepared to get through that 5-year period? And that really comes in two forms right now. We're just completing the 5-year cycle of urban water management plans that you have to make that demonstration and have a contingency plan of what you will do in severe drought. And then there's an annual certification to the state that you have done this stress test for 5 years and are planning on how to get through that. That's significantly different than the last drought. So we're much better prepared. So I would be very surprised if the governor or the state came in and just said, oh, everybody has to reduce 25%. There's no need to do that. It can be much more finely tuned now. If we have another year after this one, if next year or the year after is very, very dry, sure, we could have restrictions. But we have done a incredible job over the decades on water conservation and water use efficiency. The water use has gone down while population has gone up. Here in Orange County, California, where I am, the per capita water increase since 1991 has decreased 38%. But the population has increased by 785,000 people. So that's indicative really across all of Southern California. We are much more efficient in water use, and we think much more about how to be efficient and use water efficiently. So I think we're in a better place. We have a more effective planning framework, and we need to keep investing to stay ahead of the curve.
Rob, what can Californians or, anyone really throughout the world, even those folks in Florida, what can we do like right now, right, from a conservation standpoint, what can we do right now to make kind of, if we can get ahead or mitigate the results of the drought?
We run a very extensive series of programs here that really fall into four categories. One is residential rebates, which are either internal plumbing modifications or outdoor water use modifications. And in Southern California, like in Florida, a lot of our water use is outside. So how do you do that efficiently? How do you not overwater your lawn or shrubs? And that can be a big adjustment in terms of your water use. We have programs, the residential rebates, to help fund that, and we have programs for commercial, industrial, and institutional rebates that deal with things like cooling towers or food steamers, ice machines. We have training programs, for example, landscape contractors here in Southern California in multiple languages, so that they are better trained and knowledgeable on what plants to put in and how to do the irrigation. And then we have programs for water utilities, for example, leak detection, of going out and finding and repairing leaks in the distribution system, the pipes underground, looking at the accuracy of water meters. So those programs to actually help utilities tighten up the system and reduce loss. So whether it's at the utility, the landscaper, the institutional or industrial applications, or the residents, there are programs and information out there. And wherever you live, you can go to our website at modoc.com, not only for our programs, but for links to other programs. But if you just go in and do a search on water conservation or water use efficiency, you're going to turn something up in your area, wherever you live, that gives you suggestions of things you can do to become more efficient.
Great answer, Rob. Appreciate it very much. So we're getting to the bottom of the half hour here and going to go to a commercial break in a minute. But listen, Rob Hunter, I'd like to thank you a ton for being on the Water Zone tonight, being our guest. It was awesome to have you on, and I'm going to say you're welcome back anytime, you and Tiffany.
Excellent. I'll pass it along to Tiffany, and it's been a great time. Thank you very much.
Great night to you too, Rob, and the other Rob. Take us into the commercial, buddy.
I will. And Rob Hunter, thank you very much for joining us on the show. As always, anything you guys ever need from us, we'll be there to help. And you run a great organization with great people, and I know you guys are doing the right thing in helping people save water. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with our other featured guest coming right up. So stick around for the second half of the Water Zone. We'll be right back.
This is 1050 AM KCAA Loma Linda and 106.5 FM Yucaipa.
They love you. They love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aww.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
All right, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone. I'm Rob Starr, along with Mr. Chris Davies, and that was a great session we had with Rob Hunter, who's the GM of Municipal Water District of Orange County, and they sure do a great job in talking with their constituents and customers on how to save water and use water more wisely, and they do a good job. I can't keep saying enough of that. But on the same line, we want to continue that discussion about conservation with water. And the best way to do it. So we have a guest on coming up next who's been on our show a couple of years ago, but he's got an incredible product, and I'm not making this a commercial, but I'm telling you what he has, and it's pretty incredible when you hear what it is. His name is Jackson Maddox, and he's the founder and developer of a grass seed called Pearls Premium, and it's a pretty incredible story and a pretty incredible product for the drought season, I guess, or all year. So I'd like to welcome Jackson to the show. Welcome, Jackson.
Oh, hi. It's nice to be with you. I'm calling from Massachusetts.
Ah, so I bet you weren't at 101 degrees today as we were here.
Oh, no. It's comfortable here. And in going along with your last speaker about what the average person can do, as you mentioned, in many places, up to 50% of the clean drinking water is used outside and wasted on the lawn. So we wanted to develop a better grass that needed a fraction of the water. In some communities, in some parts of the country, they use 3 to 5 times the amount of water during a summer warm, hot day than they do in the winter. And there wasn't an environmental grass, so we created one.
Oh. And you've been doing this for how many years now?
Well, I started the research. Well, it all started when I was a little kid. My mother, whose name was Pearl, was an environmentalist during the 50s and 60s. And she used to, you know, way back then, talk to us about that we need to protect the environment and conserve water. This was long before people were talking about this kind of thing. And that's been my life mission about protecting the environment, saving water. And I've always liked grass or lawns, but I've hated everything about it. All the water, the chemicals, the runoff, all the time, the noise, lawnmowers. So back in year 2000, I wanted to see if there was such a thing as a better grass. I did a lot of research on the internet, found about 70 kinds of grasses from around the world that were supposedly needing less water and no chemicals, grew them, and after a year and a half with no chemicals and very little water, they were all dead except for 3 variations on cactus. And nobody wanted to have a lawn full of cactus, you know, to walk on. So because it didn't exist, I did some more research, found 4 of the smartest PhDs in turf science on the planet, and and we started doing research and looking for seeds that are more drought, disease, bug, and salt tolerant. We narrowed down to 7 special seeds, and then we grew thousands and thousands of trials of these 7 seeds in different proportions. It actually took 5.5 years and about 7,500 tries, and we found one batch that was growing much slower than it should. There was an interaction, and the roots were wildly coming out of the bottom of this one test pot. And then we grew 3,000 more trials, going up and down slight percentages until we perfected the interaction. And what we have in the end is a grass that grows very slow, so you only mow it once a month instead of once a week. And it puts all its energy into the roots. It actually grows 4.5-foot roots in just a few months, in 3 to 8 months, depending on how compact your soil is. And from the deep roots, it has lots of amazing benefits. Besides the fact you only have to mow this grass once a month, it needs 75% less water than any other grass. From the deep roots, it also stays green year-round. It doesn't go brown in the heat of summer and the cold of winter. It also outcompetes most weeds without chemicals. And from the deep roots, it also pulls carbon out of the air at 8 times the rate of shallow root grass to actually help lessen climate change in extreme weather. From the deep roots, it also stops erosion, stops mudslide, and holds more water to be a more effective firebreak to help wildfires from spreading. And you never need to use chemicals with this grass. You can just instead use a small amount of organic fertilizer. And in terms of it, so it's safer without chemicals, safer for dogs and children. And in fact, dogs love to nibble on it. It's healthy. It's organic, just not certified organic. And dogs love to play on it, nibble on the grass. And when they pee on the grass, it doesn't show yellow spots. Something that we absolutely didn't expect. But with shallow root grass, the dog urine burns the top 2 or 3 inches of roots. And when you have shallow root grass, it kills the plant and you have yellow spots. But with our grass, with the deep, deep roots, if you can keep the dog off for 6 weeks, the roots are down deep enough that the dog urine doesn't affect it. You have no yellow spots. And then we've, after the initial grass over these last 10 years, we've improved it again and again. It's now in its 6th generation. And in the 6th generation, it also, 2 of the seeds give off a smell that humans can't smell, but bugs can smell. So it keeps away all the bugs that attack the grass. And it doesn't eliminate mosquitoes and ticks, but it dramatically lessens mosquitoes and ticks, and by 75% or 80%. It's the only grass in the world that gets LEED credits. If you know what LEED is to buildings, like what Energy Star is to appliances, and it can. Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, I know. I was saying for our listeners, it's a good explanation. You know, we, and just to be upfront with our listeners, we have used your grass seed in some of the projects that the Water Zone has sponsored for water savings contests that we've done. And I got to tell you, every one of the winners of the contest who used this product couldn't believe how unbelievable it is, especially you know, with the deep roots. Oh, and another thing, you know, we found out they don't grow sideways. It goes straight down over 4 feet, which is incredible when you compare that to what's on the market today. And I know you've sold and the product's been used all over the place. It's not just in Massachusetts or California. It's Texas. It's, you know, once you name some of the places where this thing is hot, cold, and medium weather, I mean, it's just, and it grows nice, dark, green, thick grass. It's unbelievable. When, you know, people say, oh, it's just some kind of miracle thing like you see on television. You know, they always advertise this quick growing seeds and things like that. But yours is totally different from what I've seen on the market.
Yeah, we have lawns up, in northern Alaska near the Arctic Circle, where it gets down to minus 60 in the winter, and where they only have 1 week of summer a year. And we have lawns in Southern California in the Mojave Desert, where it frequently gets over 125 in the summer, Fahrenheit in the summer. And people use it in lawns, and they even use it on green roofs. Even though it goes down 4 foot roots outside in a lawn, in a green roof, you just have to have a couple inches of soil medium. It goes down those couple inches, bumps into the roofing or rubber membrane, and then goes sideways 4 feet and creates a half inch to 1 inch thick root mat that's basically a water tank. So you can put it on any existing roof in the United States. And so it grows everywhere. And one frequently asked question people ask is, do you have to tear up the lawn? And no, you don't. You just cut the existing grass brutal short, rake away the clippings, spread the seed at 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet, and a little bit of organic fertilizer to help start it. We don't recommend chemical fertilizer to be safer for children, animals, and the environment, but organic fertilizer, and then water it. Water it every morning, anytime between 6 and 10 a.m., and it will sprout in a week. You will have the nicest, darkest, greenest lawn in a month, and it seems to outcompete almost everything, both grass and most weeds. And right now is a great time to plant it all over California. Otherwise, you can still plant it in the middle of summer using a method called hydroseeding, which is ground up newspaper and water. They mix the seed in and they spray it on. And this paper mache sort of ground up newspaper and water holds moisture on the seed, and so you can plant it with hydroseeding method up to 110 degrees Fahrenheit air temperature in the summer. But otherwise, you have another 2 to 3 weeks to plant in hot places. Otherwise, if you don't hydroseed, otherwise you wait till late September or early October in very hot places in California. But it's something that you can put right over the existing lawn to outcompete the grass, outcompete the weeds, and to have a better looking lawn. And you can find out more about it at pearlspremium.com. That's PEARLSPREMIUM.com. The name of this is Pearls Premium Ultra Low Maintenance Lawn Seed, which is an awful long name, but says what it does. And for short, it's Pearls Premium. And
I was going to bring my co-host in, Mr. Chris Davies. He is an avid gardener. He's got an awesome yard, both in lawn and floral and vegetable gardens. Chris, do you have any questions or comments?
I do, for Jackson, and as a matter of fact, a couple of them, and then I'll kind of start with this one. So, Jackson, I'm gonna put a check mark next to everything that Rob said about our experience on the water zone, right, with installations mm-hmm. where we have used your seed, and just check off all the boxes he did. He's absolutely right. It's a great product, and I've used it myself on a section of my lawn, and I got to tell you, as the summer's approaching here, it's the west side of my lawn, and I live on an east-west street, and it's under an olive tree for half of the day, and it is doing exceedingly well. So first of all, kudos there. Just my question is this, simply, and I've asked Rob of this before, and meant to ask you, Jackson, but does soil type make a difference? I mean, is it better in soil or loamy soil or clay? I mean, what is there any difference that you've noticed, studies that you've done, any information you provide on the soil type?
It's growing everywhere in the country. It's basically cool weather type seeds, but because of the interaction between these exact seeds and these exact percentages, it slows down the growth of the plant above the soil, puts all its energy into the roots, so it grows much deeper roots. And most of the seeds are native to North America. They belong here as opposed to brought in from someplace else that don't belong here. Between being native and the deep roots and the slow growth, it grows everywhere. In fact, right now there's a university in North Carolina. I mean, people have studied it at MIT, University of California. Right now there's studies all over North Carolina growing it in all soil types, including, you know, clay soil, compacted soil, gravelly soil. It actually grows well in 100% sand, where other grass doesn't grow, only little sprigs of dune grass will grow here and there. If you have sand, you put down a quarter or a half inch of organic compost on top of the sand and to help start it, and the grass will sprout and be a beautiful, thick lawn. It'll grow down through the sand, or it grows down through gravel, goes down, you know, as deep as it can, 4 feet, or bumps into things that go sideways. But it grows in all soils. It's helpful if you have clay that goes right up to the surface, you know, to put an inch of compost or soil over the clay. But it seems to work everywhere. And, you know, along with the best management principles, both for our grass or any grass, of cutting it tall during the spring and summer. You want to cut it ideally at 3.5 inches tall, but if your lawnmower doesn't do half inches, do it at 4 inches. You leave the clippings. You want to cut it with a sharp blade, ideally, that you maybe sharpen once every 10 hours of use, and you can easily do that by just unplugging the spark plug wire so it can't start up and take your fingers off, or take the battery out, and then you just sharpen the blade at the, you know, with a $2 or $3 cheap metal file from Lowe's or Home Depot or anywhere, and just you sharpen it at the angle of the bevel on the blade, and it'll take you 2 minutes, and then it'll be so much sharper. And that's important because a sharp blade cuts the grass, and it's a nice clean cut that closes up quickly, doesn't lose water, whereas a dull blade tears the grass with this up and down jagged, if you look at the cut, and it has 3 to 4 times the amount of surface area for water to get out and disease to get in. So if you have a sharp blade and you can quickly sharpen it once every 10 hours of use, it'll go faster, your lawnmower will last longer, and your lawn will look darker green and beautiful. That's one of the tips that Major League Baseball does in terms of sharp blade. Is very important to have the best looking grass. And you leave the clippings, and it's helpful to test the soil just to make sure the pH is somewhere between 6.0 and 7.0. And like there's places around San Diego where it's a little bit alkaline, so you can adjust the soil. But there's more information on our website about testing the soil, when to plant, in what areas of the country, and other little tips. But basically, mowing tall, leave the clippings, and having a sharp blade are the best management practices for our grass or any grass. But again, if you can put in a native deep root grass that holds more water, you're way ahead of the game, and you can cut your water use you can take it one step further and put in a Pearl's Premium ultra-low maintenance grass right over your existing lawn to outcompete the grass and outcompete the weeds. And you don't have to take our word for it. We've had, and Rob's word for it, but we've had rave reviews from master gardeners who write for everything from ABC, NBC, CBS, Wall Street Journal, even Fox News and CNN, which these days is about the only thing that Fox News and CNN will ever agree on is that they both love our grass.
Because people go to the big box stores or their local landscape distributor and stuff, and they see all these big name brands and stuff. Where do you sell? How do people get their hands on this stuff?
Well, in the future, we're in discussion with some big box companies now. And right now, it's only available on the East Coast at Whole Foods supermarkets and at dozens of quality garden centers around the country. But for the moment, for most people, you can order from pearlspremium.com. And it really pays back for itself quickly. And most people don't understand that your grass, the cost of your grass seed is only 10% of your annual cost of having a lawn. 90% is the mowing, the water, the fertilizer, and the chemicals. So our grass is just a little bit more expensive up front because there's 7 premium perennial seeds that come back year after year. If you put it in yourself, it pays back for itself in just 2 or 3 weeks. If you hire a landscaper, it pays back for itself in a month or two, and then you have huge savings on the mowing, the water, and the fertilizer. And the most important thing is you're doing your share for the environment. You're saving yourself time, money, and water. You're not using chemicals, which is safer for children and animals and our water table and the environment. And you're sequestering 8 times the carbon, so you're doing your share to make a little dent, at least from your lawn or your grass, in climate change and extreme weather. People say, "Well, you know, climate change is an important thing we need to address, but what can I do about it?" Well, here's something: you can put a deep-rooted grass over your existing grass to sequester 8 times the carbon to lower the carbon for your home and your contribution to the community, and have a better looking dark emerald green grass. It's basically an opportunity to save water, save money, save time, protect your health from chemicals, and help save the climate.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people who overwater their lawns and put fertilizer down, all that runoff goes down the drain and goes into water places, the storage areas, so we don't want to see that. Well, we're coming up against our NBC News Hour, so I really appreciate you coming on the show, Jackson, and talking about what you've got going, and especially congratulations on the LEED certification. That could be a good thing, and so people, go to the website, www.pearlspremium.com. And take a look at it and get a small bag, try it out. You'll love it. And again, Jackson, thank you very much for coming on the show. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for taking a leadership on saving water and saving the planet.
We appreciate it. Well, people, we're at the end of our show. Next week we have a great guest, Todd Corbin. He's coming on from Riverside Public Utilities. He's the general manager. And Chris and I have one more important thing that we all need to tell you to do this week. Please keep your planet blue. Blue. We like that color.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. President Biden is selling his massive infrastructure